You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Gatchman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, Dave Goss out in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, switching coasts, no longer in the Octagon, no fighting cats surrounding him. Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Boys, how are we doing? Everything good on this Monday?
No longer in the Octagon, but still in the sunshine. I'm in Florida, so things are great.
Oh, wow. Any chance he gets comes the weather needling. Congratulations to you. Yeah, you'll be in Baltimore in like a day and a half, so don't feel too smug at this time. Why will he be in Baltimore? That's because the MLS Super Draft is on Thursday. Really, that's kind of the reboot for the MLS season, guys. We've had a little bit of a breather. It's gone far too quickly. We've mentioned that. But at 1 p.m. on Thursday, you can tune in the Super Draft live on MLSsoccer.com. Complete coverage and awesome draft tracker. Everything you need to keep up with what's going on as the new season begins and as players come in and everything else. MLS in full swing, of course. You already know the rumors are going around. But first, Dave, you've got some business to attend to. Powerball, you're snatching up every ticket you can find.
Well, I would like to announce that this will most likely be my last show because Wednesday night I will be jet-setting my way to probably Laos just to lay on a beach for a week while I figure out the rest of my life.
I think Cambodia is probably, in U.S. soccer terms, I mean, that's probably where
that's
you want to get away.
Okay, yeah. So that's where I'll be. So this will be most likely my last show after I make $1.3 billion, of which I'll get about half of.
I think make is a misnomer there, but you know,
why?
You're not making it.
I've earned it.
Yeah, you're
going to the bodega.
Am I the only one among us that has not bought a Powerball ticket?
I haven't actually bought one yet, but I've put my wife on the job. But she's pretty into it, and we're like, we're certain that we're gonna win. So I'm sorry to burst your bubble, guys, man, but gonna have to be back at work by the end of the week.
Well, I just want you guys to know that I've already doled out like $100 million worth of millions to each person.
Gotcha.
You guys couldn't.
You've already
on that
made
list.
That decision. I mean, I think everybody has that conversation with their friends when this stuff happens. Like, what would you do with the money? Would you buy an MLS team? Are you? Could Dave Goss be the next? I see that twinkle in your eye.
Yeah, of course. Thinking about it. No, I don't think I would. But if I were to,
okay,
I'd probably buy an expansion spot and
where are you
start my
put
own
it?
Team. Where would I put it? Wow.
I mean, FC Mediocre Curve is where I'm going. So the road trips to Great Bend are going to be a little bit difficult for some teams. A lot of bus travel
Big
there,
Bend?
But that's an advantage for the Great Bend Bronco Busters. That's what we're gonna call them.
Some thought into this, haven't you?
Oh, that was off the top of my head.
I guess I'll go fourth New York team in the area, and I'll go Long Island FC.
Oh, you got to go Brooklyn. Come on.
No, I'm from Long Island.
I'll
bring the game home back to where it belongs, and we'll dominate for years to come.
A lot of uncertainty here. Let's switch over to something that has just as much uncertainty. That's the Super Draft. Matt, you're down in Fort Lauderdale at the Combine. Two games down, correct? There'll be the third round of games on Tuesday. You sent me a text this weekend in which you said, next year, drop everything. Make sure you get to Fort Lauderdale. You have to be here for the Combine. I need you to explain why that is, because I still don't fully understand.
It's like Bohemian Grove for MLS. You know, it's like the secluded, kind of very compartmentalized vacation, essentially, for almost everybody involved with the league. You get down here for a week. You see people at the games, and the games aren't great, but there's good individual talent there. It's always fun to see that. But then afterwards, everybody congregates in, you know, the hotel lobby bar, and trades are made. Some are bad, some are good. And you get to see who likes each other, who really does it. And then you end up running into people out all over, you know, the A1A, Beachfront Avenue, the restaurants and clubs and everything. And of course, there's a beautiful beach right there. It is the best week of the year in MLS. And, you know, what happens in Fort Lauderdale mostly stays in Fort Lauderdale. But you you have to come see it for yourself at some point.
There are some things percolating out of Fort Lauderdale, some reports about trades and potential signings. We'll cover all that in the second segment. We'll also talk to Joshua Yarrow, the rumored maybe number one, certainly a top prospect, a top pick, I'm sure, in this draft, the Georgetown defender, very talented guy. We'll talk about to Matt about him in just a second. But there are some rumors about Yuromov Sisian. There's some rumors about Jack Mack. Ethan Finley officially signed an extension with Columbus Crew SC. I expect more to start coming out of the combine here in maybe the next couple days as deals get wrapped up and teams start to target their super draft prospects. But Matt, we've had two games. You've had some time to you know, talk to coaches, talk to scouts, let things percolate a little bit. Who's the guy that's really impressed you? Who are the guys that are standing out right now?
I mean, the two guys who have stood out the most are probably Eric Verso and Tsubasa Endo. A couple of seniors, a couple of guys who are more soccer player than athlete. And that's nice to see because, generally speaking, in the draft, it's the guys who are big, strong, fast who get it done. But Endo has, I think, a goal and an assist in his two games. Verso has a goal and two assists. And both of them, you could see them sort of thinking through the game as it's happening. And they play like pros, and they think like pros. And I think those two guys have pushed themselves from maybe the fringes of the second round to somewhere in the first round, hopefully. I don't think either is a game breaker in MLS, but I think they can both find a home with the right team. And then on the back line, it's the right back from Georgetown, Keegan Rosenberry. The Union are just absolutely crushed that they weren't able to get a homegrown claim on him. They tried really hard. He came in, I think most people thought, middle or late first round. He might go number six. Union might take him with their second of their two first-round picks because he's just been phenomenal on both sides of the ball, and he aced the agility drills, which is a good thing to have in your back pocket because we all know fullbacks have to defend 1v1 on an island every now and again. There were real questions about that for him, and he's answered it both on the field and in athletic testing.
Now, Matt, there's kind of a feeling, I think, that this year's combine, perhaps more than previous ones, was less important, that teams weren't going to come into this and come to conclusions based solely on this body of work, that they'd done enough scouting, I should say, that they felt good going forward with the information base that they had. But you're talking about testing, you're talking about performances here, guys moving up and down the board. How much movement are you hearing? How much of this is still squarely up in the air? Is there a hierarchy here at all?
Well, I mean, there's always a hierarchy. These, you know, most of the guys who will be early off the board come from programs that are well-known producers of pro talent. Most, if not all, of these guys have been scouted, not just in college, but in PDL. So there aren't any huge surprises. And I think that more than anything, and like you said, more than in years past, it's being the combine performance and the agility testing, all that is being used as a tiebreaker. If there are two guys who, you know, kind of 50% on one, 50% on the other, you could eyeball them in person for a week and you can see how they do in this type of situation. And I think teams will use it more as that rather than picking, you know, throwing a dart sort of out of the blue and hoping that it hits.
Now, one thing I did hear, Matt, is that there's some teams down there, expansion teams, kind of getting the lay of the land, and we'll see what lessons they learn and apply in the coming years. They will likely have that number one pick. One expansion team will, at least. This year, that's the Chicago Fire. They have the number one, Joshua Yarrow, who we'll speak to, as I said, in just a little bit, is a guy that a lot of people have been talking about or at least labeling for that spot for, I mean, it's almost at the point where it's years, you know, waiting for him to come out. Would it be last year? Would it be this year? Is there any question as to whether he'll go number one? Is there a question as to whether they'll hold on to that pick? Because I know I heard Nelson Rodriguez say, we need center backs, we need defenders. A lot of people out there not so sure Yarrow is a center back at the next level. What do you make of the number one pick? What could happen with it, and what could happen to Joshua Yarrow?
Well, you're absolutely right that they could move it. I think they're actively fielding calls for potential trades because, look, the Fire have, like, 12 people on the roster. They need to get a bunch of starters in there all over the back line and half a midfield as well. So if somebody blows them away by offering, you know, three guys who they think could help, they'll obviously have to listen to that. And then there are, I mean, there are other guys involved in the first pick. It could be Jack Harrison, the midfielder from Wake Forest, who hasn't played down here yet. It could be Abu Dhanladi from UCLA, if the league is able to sign him. From what I'm hearing, that's unlikely, but it's still in play. But for me, I do think that Yarrow is pretty close to a sure thing. I think that he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He keeps the game simple, and I think he reads it better than he's given credit for. And the biggest thing is that his skill is the ability to use his athleticism to make the field smaller and to cut down the impact of his own team's mistakes. And this is MLS. This isn't La Liga. This isn't Serie A. This isn't a league where the ball only rarely turns over in bad positions. This is a league that's frenetic, that's fast, that has a lot of turnovers. So I think you do very well to get a center back in there who can minimize the negative impact of that sort of thing. I think he's a center back. And I would not overcomplicate things. I would absolutely take him number one.
Now, if it's not Chicago, it could be someone else taking him number one. Is there any thought to maybe another team that's pushing hard to get themselves up there, or another team that really likes his fit in their system?
I don't know for certain. I mean, you have to think about things like, okay, well, if the Red Bulls sell Matt Miazga, do they maybe try to trade up with a ton of allocation cash and a starting caliber right back in Chris Duval and maybe their own pick and try to get Yarrow number one so they have a new young center back to sort of build around? Something like that could happen. And the other thing is a team could trade up to number one because they really want Brandon Vincent. Brandon Vincent was awesome in day one at the Combine, and now he's at U.S. national team camp, and his ceiling is starter for the U.S. national team at left back. His floor is best defensive left back in the league for a decade. So when the floor is that high, you have to consider him at number one. If it wasn't for Jovin Jones, who's a very, very good left back and a starter for Trinidad and Tobago, I think the Fire would seriously be considering Vincent actually at number one.
That's a hell of a floor, Matt.
It's a big floor, yeah. I mean, look, injuries can change everything, but I think that, you know, in the time I've been going to the Combine, I think this is my fifth year going here, I think Vincent is pretty clearly the best fullback that I've seen.
Now we're talking about guys whose stock is rising. There's obviously some stock dropping somewhere here in this, and I don't know that Jack Harrison falls in that category, the Wake Forest midfielder. He's shown a lot. He's a great player. Everybody knows that, but he's not playing. There's some questions about his health. What do you know about this guy? Why is he not on the field this weekend?
His agents say that he picked up a groin injury in the NCAA tournament and played through it, and now he's close to 100%, but he doesn't want to push it at the combine and risk an injury that could jeopardize his preseason. So the messaging there is that it's a mutual decision between the kid and the agents, and MLS, the official word is that he was cleared to play after the medical that they had, and chose not to. Some other people have heard other things, but that's the official word.
What is his ceiling and floor here? And I've heard a lot about him. I got to be honest with you. I only have so much time in the day. I don't get to watch the amount of college soccer I want. But there's been kind of a, I don't want to call it a consensus, but kind of the rumblings that this guy is a, if not top five talent, certainly top three.
I think that unless Dhanladi is suddenly added to the mix, Harrison will be the first attacking talent off the board. I don't think he slips lower than three. He's younger than everybody else in the draft by, I want to say, 16 months or so. And he's a gamer. This is stuff that if you go back to high school and talk to coaches who faced him in high school, they'll say, it doesn't matter that he was twice as good as everybody on the field. He went out there and tried to kill you for 90 minutes. He has that toughness and that pro mentality about him at age 18 or 19 that a lot of guys don't develop till later or not at all. So I think that really has a lot of coaches intrigued. The big question, of course, is where does he end up playing? He played more center midfield in college. I don't know if he ends up there or if he ends up on the wing.
One of the teams that's going to have an interesting day, at least, is Philadelphia Union, the third pick and the sixth pick. How do you see them handling those two picks in terms of going for potential on both, maybe using one for a solid player and one for potential? What have you heard?
They're not saying exactly. I mean, they do want to get players who can play, is how they put it, which doesn't really tell us a whole lot. I do think they have some flexibility in terms of going for maybe a high upside pick because they have the full USL affiliate now. So you can stash a guy there for a year and say, okay, come, you know, 2017 or 2018, this is a guy who we think will be a starter. He doesn't need to play right away. That said, if Brandon Vincent is there at number three, you pick him and you play him as your starting left back for the entire season. And I would not hesitate if I were them to pick Rosenberry at number eight. I know it'll burn a little bit because, or number six rather, I know it'll burn a little bit because they had the homegrown claim denied. But he's a good player, and that's a tough spot to fill. And Ernie Stewart's walking in front of me right now. That's one of the things that happens at the combine. You get technical directors and coaches just walking around making deals. So,
what's the most bizarre thing you've seen?
Ernie says hello.
Oh, hey, what's up, Ernie? We know Ernie. Give us a little another taste, man. What's the thing that you saw that you thought to yourself, boy, this is like bizarro MLS world?
Well, the people who hang out together kind of shocks you, and you know, who decides to order the fourth Jack and Coke at 3 o'clock in the morning at the bar can surprise you a little bit. The good one was last night. The Union had a team dinner right in the hotel restaurant, and everybody showed up, you know, dressed up a little bit, and Ernie showed up in his tracksuit, and they sent him back upstairs to go change his clothes and put on some decent, something decent. Well, I thought that was pretty amusing.
You know what the guarantee there is? Matt Doyle's at the bar at 3 a.m. seeing who's ordering a Jack and Coke. No doubt about you're that inside scout, man. You're on top of everything down there. We're going to talk to Joshua Yarrow in just a second, so stick around with us. A couple more things for you, Matt, before we get out of here. These Generation Adidas guys and the drop. We talked a little about Harris, and he's got injuries. Is there anybody out there that had a big name coming in that people are wavering on or that you're wavering on?
Fabian Arbers wasn't great yesterday. He was just signed a Generation Adidas contract. I think he's a second forward. I think he's a guy who needs to play with a number nine, not as a number nine. And I don't think he's a winger, and that means he needs to land on a team that plays a 4-4-2 or maybe even a 3-5-2 if that comes back. And there aren't a lot of teams like that left in the league. So that's one. I think the other one is Kyle Fisher, the center back from Clemson, and he was very good throughout his career. He has a reputation as a leader and a winner, but he got just undressed by Stanford in the College Cup final, and he hasn't looked great so far at the combine. And honestly, he's a little bit small compared to the other guys, other than Yarrow, compared to the other guys in the central defensive mix. So I think there's a worry about him. I could definitely see him sliding come Thursday.
You already mentioned Bethlehem Steel a little bit and the Philly Union's thinking. Has that been a big conversation around Combine with the different coaches and GMs about maybe how they look at the draft differently or how they're looking at players differently to fill out both their first team as well as these now USL 2 teams?
Well, I don't think they think of it as how do we fill out our USL 2 team. It just changes the metrics in terms of the time frame you have to develop a talent. You know, I mean, if you just look at like the 2010 draft, Tony Chani was, I think, the number two draft pick in that one, and the Red Bulls got rid of him, I think, midway through his second year because it said we just don't have time to wait around. Now, if, you know, RVNY2 was around then, they could have stashed him for a year or two. He could have gotten 60 reps as a pro against other pros. And you know, maybe they keep him on. So I think that knowing that the timeline is extended for how long you can take to coach somebody up makes those high upside players a little bit more intriguing. Because, look, we all know that you're not going to get too many stars out of the draft. You're looking for squad players. You're looking for guys who can fill a role. There's nobody here who's going to unseat Mauro Diaz as the number 10 for FC Dallas. You know, there's nobody here who's going to walk right in and replace Perry Kitchen in DC. So it's something that I think coaches are taking into consideration. And quite honestly, I think it's a sign of progress for the league.
All right. Let's, before we let you go here, we'll bring you back here in a little bit, but you got to enjoy that sun somehow. Your top three or your top five, it's up to you. I want you to take a guess here. Give us kind of the beginnings of that mock draft. I'm sure people can catch that final mock win on MLS Soccer.
That'll be out on Tuesday evening or Wednesday morning, depending on how the desk feels about it. So,
give me a little hint, though. Top three. Who's your top three right now as it stands?
It's Yarrow, it's Vincent, and it's Harrison in some order. Colorado's not talking at all, so I don't know if Yarrow goes number one. I don't know if they'll lean toward Vincent or they'll lean toward Harrison. I think both of those guys have really high floors. They're not risky picks, so I think that's what teams like the most about that.
And for fans out there watching this right now, U.S. January Camp, seven of the players in this camp were drafted in the last 3 years in MLS. So there are players out there. It's not always the top three, but there are going to be players in this draft that are going to be difference makers.
Certainly the case. The Super Draft, 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. You can catch all the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com, a live stream, analysis of all the picks, plus video breakdowns of everything that you want to know, need to know, perhaps, as your team heads towards the 2016 season. Stick with us. Possible number one pick, Joshua Yarrow, joining next.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe, and I am sure that we are not the only podcast or radio show to basically play David Bowie all day long. I've heard the soft reverberations of it through the office all day. David Bowie, a legend, an absolute legend, passing away this Monday morning at the age of 69 from cancer. It's one of those that every time one of these happens, you kind of have to put it in perspective. And Doyle, I have to be honest with you. Bowie's not a guy from my own kind of cultural life that's made a huge impact. He's a guy that I've always looked at and said, okay, the message here is be whoever you want to be and make it cool. And it's an awesome, awesome message. But looking around on Twitter, looking around on all the different news organizations and websites and whatever have you, it's clear that his impact has been absolutely massive to a lot of people. And I think you're maybe on this show – and I'm not calling you old, but I'm saying maybe you can put it in the best perspective from your own life.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the first description is be whoever you want to be and make it cool. And you know, David Bowie was walking around in drag in 1968 in London getting beat up by thugs, and 4 years later, everybody was dressing that way in London and wanted to be him. And he invented glam rock, and then he killed it with the song we just played, Rebel Rebel. And I mean, he was obviously the 70s are before my time, but I grew up in the 80s, and I was introduced to David Bowie through Labyrinth, like so many in my generation were. And then you kind of go back and realize what he did. And without David Bowie, there's no Prince, and without Prince, there's no next thing. And without no next thing, you eventually get to where we are today. I mean, there's even an awesome video of Arsene Wenger talking about how influential David Bowie was to his thinking. So this is a guy who just culturally, you feel it. when he's gone?
You know, today everyone's talking about him, right? So my family in whatever email chain or text chain we have, and my sister told a story that she was at the Whitney Museum here in New York a few years ago, and when she left, the coat check person said, "Did you see David Bowie and his wife Iman yet?" And they said no, so they ran back in to find him, and they said they found him, and then it became a second art exhibit of everyone watching David Bowie watch him look at the art, and that there was a crowd. And she said that Iman was insanely beautiful as well. But that was a cool story to hear this morning that I'd never heard before.
Yeah, that's. I have to imagine his whole life in a lot of ways seems to kind of be a running art exhibit, reinventing himself many, many times. Thoughts to his fans, thoughts to his family, thoughts to his friends. David Bowie passing away at 69 here this Monday morning. A guy who's just starting his career, Joshua Yarrow, maybe doesn't have the bright lights that David Bowie had, but you got to start somewhere. He's on the phone now, the Georgetown defender, Generation Adidas signing. Josh, how's it going, man?
I'm well, thanks. How about you?
We are very, very good. Perhaps less busy than you are. It's my understanding that you just got done with a little bit of a meeting with the team. How has this day gone for you? No games on Monday, but it doesn't sound like they've given you a break.
No, I mean, I thought I was going to have a little bit of break from playing, but I've been in meetings all day. But, I mean, it has been good. It has been really fun. It's great meeting all the teams and getting to learn a little bit about all the teams. It has been busy, but in a fun way.
So you're a guy who has a lot of hype around your name coming into this Super Draft. Someone who has been rumored as perhaps the number one overall pick for a while now, maybe even a full year. When you go into these interviews, what are coaches asking you? What do you feel like people are trying to kind of get a read on as far as your personality or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most teams, you know, I stay away, always know who I am as a player, but it's difficult for them. I think the most important thing is knowing me as a person, and most of the questions that they ask is just trying to learn a little bit about me and who I am as a person. And I think all the teams value just not just a good player, but also a good person, and that's for most part what the meetings have been about.
What's a question that maybe caught you a little bit off guard? Is there one that sticks out to you, or maybe one that you just thought was especially insightful?
I think one of the questions was, what was my one of my greatest failure, I think, was one of the questions. And when questions like that hit you in the moment, you know, you don't want to take a minute to go back and think about things and then give an answer. You try to answer it on the spot. And that question was really hard to answer on the spot. And because, I as a human, you have a lot of disappointments along the way, and trying to figure out which one was the greatest failure, it's sometimes tough. I think that was one of the questions that I've gotten throughout the interviews that I wasn't expecting.
Obviously, I have to ask you now, what was your biggest failure? What was the answer you gave? And with time to think back, have you changed your answer at all?
No, I mean, and one of it was actually really not a straightforward answer, but you know, sometimes you go through life and people really tell you what you can and cannot do, and it's just a failure. But in most cases, you know, looking at myself in some situations where, you know, people said I couldn't do something, and then for a minute I believed in that, and I believed what they said was. And then I realized after a while, you know, they can say what they think and they can say what they want. I know myself there, and I know I can do whatever I set my mind to. And so that moment of believing in what people said I couldn't do, it's what I consider as my greatest failure.
And one of the things that people are wondering whether or not you can or cannot do is play center back in MLS.
Exactly.
Some people talk about your height. What have you talked about with people? What's your feelings on it?
I mean, obviously, I still see myself as a center back at the next level, and a lot of the teams that I've spoken to have actually confirmed that, yes, they'll play me at the center back if they drop me, and a lot of some are also looking at me in a different position. But you know, it all comes down to what I think about myself, and I firmly believe in myself that I can be center back at this level.
you're a guy who has the athletic ability. There's no doubt about that. There's no questions really about your ability on the ball. I think a lot of people, when they look at center back, especially in MLS, there's this idea that you have to be this big guy, that the successful guys are huge. And you look around the league, and that's not necessarily true. How much of a chip on a shoulder on your shoulder is that? And you know, when you look at MLS and you say, okay, I have to go up against guys like Kai Kamara, what about you and your makeup as a player do you think will allow you to compete and succeed in that central position?
I mean, it was the same thing I had when I was going to college. Sometimes coaches told me, you know, you cannot play back in college because of your size, your height, and all that. And I went to college, I think I did pretty well for myself. And it's the same thing. It just people really do not know how function in an environment until you're put in that environment. And my thing is, you know, how can I go into the next level and to play as a center back and prove that I can play that position and play well. And that's, you know, by doing all the little things right and doing everything right. And to me, it's going to be a challenge because there's a lot of good players in the league. But I'm going to sit down and look at how exactly what I can add to my game and how to approach every game and how to approach every guy I play against. And that's something that I believe with the right amount of training and with the right amount of belief in myself, I can compete against anyone in the league.
Do you watch a lot of MLS, Joshua? Is this kind of a part of your process of deciding to go pro and deciding to come to MLS? Did you watch a lot of the league? Are you familiar with some of the guys that you might match up with? And if you are, who are some of those that you look at and say, I really respect him?
I mean, I do watch some MLS games. Obviously, I went to Georgetown and I lived in DC, and so I trained with DC United a few times, and I've grown to enjoy how much the league has grown and how the level of competition has risen.
So Josh, we're talking to you a lot about what you might be like as a player in MLS, but you chose not to come into the league last year. You were thinking about whether or not you were going to come this year. So if you weren't, what else would you be doing? You seemed very focused on the education you were getting at Georgetown.
Yeah, I mean, I had three options. Either to stay in school, to sign with the league, or to go to Europe. And those were all options that I was considering. And so if I wasn't, or if I hadn't signed with the league, I'd have looked at my options in Europe or worst case scenario, go back to Georgetown.
Why MLS? Why did you choose the league? What about it? And what kind of interest did you have in Europe?
I mean, I had interest from you know, Europe and the MLS, but I've grown to, you know, watch the league and watch it grow to the point that it is right now, and I've enjoyed the style of play, and I think looking at myself, the way I play fits well with the way that most teams in the league play, and that was something that really attracted me to sign with the league.
Is there anyone specifically that you talk to convince yourself? Is it guys you know in the league, or maybe Georgetown grads that have gone into the league?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to people that I know that are in the league, but also I wouldn't say that influenced my decision. I made the decision solely based on the information that I get it and looking at myself and what's best for me.
Let's go another level higher, Josh. Are you a guy that's looking to play for Ghana someday? I have to imagine that's a dream.
Yes. I mean, that's definitely everyone's dream, to be able to represent your country. And whenever that may be, I'll gladly accept the offer and would love to compete for my country.
And one of the things we saw is your path from Ghana to the U.S. was through a program, I believe, called Right to Dream Academy.
Yeah.
And there's other players in this draft, as well as in MLS and U.S. soccer, through it. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is and what your experience was like through it?
Yeah, so I came from a program called the Right to Dream Academy, and that I was there for 4 years. I really enjoyed my time there. I got to develop as a person, and I was able to win a scholarship to a private boarding school in Santa Barbara, California, called the Kate School, and then as a result ended up at Georgetown. And so that has been the gist of, you know, my pathway from Ghana to the States.
Do you keep in touch with other Right to Dream Academy alumni and other players around the country?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I mean, you know, nowadays you have social media. I contact a lot of, my friends too, through Facebook and Skype and all that. And so, you know, we are one big family, and I try to keep in touch because everyone is, you know, kind of all around the world, and we're all doing our own things. And so it's nice to always hear about what others are doing, and just to catch up on life.
Good night. We'll have to catch up with them here very soon. The Super Draft on Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern. You can watch a live stream right here on MLSsoccer.com. Complete coverage of the draft. Perhaps Josh Yarrow going first. You're going to be there, I assume, Josh. Have you got your suit? What's the day like? Do you expect to be nervous? Is there what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because obviously it's going to be a good day, and it's going to be really nice knowing exactly where I'm going to end up. Because right now that I have a contract, I don't know exactly which club is going to pick me up. And on Thursday after the draft, I will find that out and know exactly where I'm going to be for the next few years. And so that's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And it should be a great day.
Do you have any preferences? You go to college on the East Coast. You went to boarding school on the West Coast. I'm sure flew over those middle states a lot in between. Those middle states, one of them being mine, of course. Do you have a club that you want to go to? An area you want to go to? Any preferences?
I mean that I'm open to anything. I'm not. If there's one thing, I'm not scared of changes. And any club that chooses me, I'd be on it, and I will look forward to going there and doing my absolute best.
There you have it. A lot of clubs certainly want to have a guy like Joshua Yarrow on their roster. He will be up for grabs on Thursday. Tune in for sure. Josh, thank you so much for joining us, man. Good luck. Have fun. All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Big things ahead for Joshua Yarrow. We're still waiting to find out where he will end up in MLS, a Generation Adidas signing. Remember, the Super Draft, 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. Live stream right here at MLSsoccer.com. Complete coverage as well. We are your destination as 2016 begins to roll. Let's jump into some other rumors here that are outside the Super Draft. As always, plenty going on in MLS. We'll start with Real Salt Lake. Yoram Obsisian, you might remember him, started out his career with the Kansas City Wizards, the then Wizards, and then moved to Real Salt Lake, was a really good forward for them for a while, and then headed over to first Denmark and then Russia. Some hefty transfer fees in that time. He's now with Spartak Moscow, but maybe not for long. The report out of Salt Lake City is that terms have been agreed to bring him back to RSL. This is the number 9 that they've been looking for a while, guys. Remember, Alvaro Saborío moved over to DC United, was on kind of his, I'm not going to say his last legs, but it slowed down a little bit on the production front. This looks like a really good signing, Doyle. It also looks like a signing that won't come cheaply. Is this money well invested should the deal go down?
Well, I think it's money well invested. He's going to be a DP, and he's been productive, actually more productive in Europe in a couple of pretty good leagues than he ever was on a per-game basis in MLS. The question I have is, oh, and it's worth also noting, he's a guy in the prime of his career.
Yeah, he's 28 years old.
Yeah. So this is good on a few levels. I don't see him as a pure number 9. I think he runs the channels more than he holds the ball up, and I worry a little bit about their ability to use that properly in the new 4-3-3, because they got to have somebody who comes back to the ball and somebody who helps the midfield out a little bit and just can be that release valve. And that's never been Mavsisian's game. He's been more of a second forward throughout his career than a true number 9. So I think he's a really good player, and I think it's a good signing and one you have to make. I'm not sure it's a perfect fit.
I do believe in the time that he's been playing with Armenia, the national team, I believe he's played more of a center forward role at times, so he's gotten a little bit more experience there. He's not a giant body, but he is 6 feet, and so maybe that will allow him a little bit. And I agree with Doyle. You might see a way of him playing with Devin Sandoval, because Sandoval's clearly not that goal scorer. Sebastian Jaime is clearly not that goal scorer on his own, so maybe you find a way to get two of them on the field. Start changing up your formation.
Certainly need that production. Some hurt, you know, it hurt last year that João Plata did not was not able to play the full season, had some injury issues. And you're right, Sebastian Jaime had some issues. Brito Martinez will be a guy that they'll be looking for. Certainly need some goals there in Salt Lake, but that looks to be at least a pretty good move if it goes down. Props to Craig Weigel and the gang if they're able to get that done, because I know we've heard a lot about this over the last couple transfer windows. Pretty complicated. Spartak Moscow not going to give this guy away. I think they paid 7.5 million euros for him, so certainly an investment they made in him, but it'll be fun to see him back. The one thing about Jura, I will say, from his time in MLS, there were always questions about how he fit into teams, not necessarily from a personality aspect, from the fact that this guy is a, you know, get the ball on your feet and shoot it whenever you got it. Kind of like Kai Kamara early in his career. We've seen how Kamara worked out. Maybe this return to MLS will be similar for Movsisian. Has the ability to score 20-plus goals in MLS. There's no doubt about that. Speaking of the Crew, I mentioned it. Ethan Finley signing a contract extension with Crew SC. That's a big move for them, locking him down. A couple other signings here you might want to know about. Alan Gordon, he's back with LA. That's where he wanted to be. The club wanted him back. They got it done. So he will be that big bruising number nine that opposing defenses don't want to see come the 75th, 78th minute for LA at the StubHub Center. Let's see. Also, the Crew, I missed this one. I was going to go right to it. Jack Mack. He is now the smaller, more diminutive Alan Gordon non-bachelor. Look, he's just a goal. Is he a goal poacher off the bench now? Is that his MLS identity? Because that kind of sucks for a guy who, you know, he had those 10 goals with Philly. He made the All-Star team. He went to U.S. Men's National Team camp. People were saying this is the next big thing. And now it looks like teams are just picking him up and trading him around as a guy who can score goals at the end of games.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he's got to go to Portland, and he's got to be pretty close to what Max Iarudi was last year, and he's got to embrace that. And then if he gets the opportunity to show he's more, then he has to take that opportunity. But right now, I mean, I don't think of Jack McInerney as anything other than a goal poacher, and there hasn't been a ton of evidence to – you know, to make that at all controversial.
Certainly a worthwhile role, though. The Timbers is really benefiting, as you said, from Max Iarudi. Maybe FC Dallas will now get that as well. But Jack Mack on the move once again, going from the Crew SC to the MLS Cup champion Portland Timbers. I feel like that might be the first time that I've said that. Another guy who has signed with the Timbers, I believe this one's official, right? It's Nag Grabavoy. He's a guy that Caleb Porter knows well, certainly from their days at Indiana as well as MLS. Porter, an assistant coach with the Hoosiers, while Grabavoy was there. So that's a signing that you look at and you say, well, that looks a lot like a guy like a veteran presence such as Will Johnson that you're bringing into the midfield, maybe a shuttler, a guy who can hold on to the ball. So a nice signing for them. Let's see what else we got going on here. Junior Flores is rumored to be going on loan with Orlando City. We'll have a little bit of a news update on him here at MLSsoccer.com after we speak to Phil Rollins. Remember, Orlando City SC is still trying to figure out what's up with that front office structure. Some questions to be had after Paul McDonough's out and then Carneiro is out. Armando Carneiro, who came in from Portugal, he left as well. So they're still trying to figure that one out. In Red Bull land, we did mention that Dax McCarty signed a new deal on the last show. The Ginger Ninja getting it done. 4-year deal for him. What we didn't mention, or failed to mention, I should say, Damian Perenelle and Felipe also re-signed. So Perenelle, you'll remember, is recovering from that knee injury. But Dave, there's perhaps another guy within the Red Bull family that they may go to at center back. Rumors, at least, surrounding a Tim Sebastian who hails from the parent club, so to speak, over there in Europe.
I don't know if it's the parent club. Yeah, isn't Salzburg the parent club?
I don't know. The radiator's banging. So I think it was a little late. It probably got me on the bag.
He is
probably
at Leipzig, but they say that he's a great personality. He doesn't fit with the new coach that came in, but that he's a player that the Red Bull family would like to keep in their organization, and he's a consummate pro. And we know the rumors around Matt Miazga. I mean, Doyle already talked about potentially pushing for Yaro or something. You got to think they're going to bring in more center back help, mm-hmm, irrelevant of Miazga. But if you're looking at maybe losing him in the summer, especially if you can find someone that you can get ready and get going in the beginning of the season, it would make sense for them.
And we'll see what happens there. One center back, or I should call it defender, really, Jaleel Anababa, has played all over the back line. He will not be with Sporting KC next year. He signed with the Houston Dynamo. Sporting KC, on the other hand, announced a couple of re-signings. These are big. These are going to allow that fan base to take a deep sigh of relief because they were worried about that defensive midfield spot, I think. Sonny Mustafar re-signing. Paulo Nagamura re-signing as well. Big moves for them. The one spot I would say that people may feel that they're still a little bit thin, and this is going to be hard to fill because they basically have a full roster now. I think they have all 28 filled for the time being, is center forward. No obvious backup behind Dom Dwyer. I would pose to you guys that they consider Christian Namath to be that guy because they now have Brad Davis and Justin Mapp to fill in, as well as the answer, Jacob Peterson, still to fill in wherever the hell you want to put him. I sometimes think that they see Namath as the center forward of the future for them. He's a little bit better with his back to goal. Am I crazy? Or
I'm not going to say you're crazy. I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense. But at the same time, Namath is probably going to be gone for a month this summer for the Euros. And that'll still leave Sporting, one man short in the center forward rotation. So I do think you could play Namath there. I would be fine with that if I was a KC fan, but I also think that they definitely need more depth.
Sonny Mustavar back, Dave. I think all 13 or something like that of the players who played more than 17 games last year, that's a stat thanks to Mr. Charles Gooch, are back this year. Most of their additions seem to be within the league. Are they making the right moves?
I think they are. I think that they saw that I think they believe that they have the talent. They just didn't have the depth or the health luck. And they brought in more guys who have done it before. They brought in more guys who have experience in this league because they're going to be challenged now with CCL as well as in the league. But they had devastating injuries to their back line last year. And they still were able to sneak into the playoffs in a very tough Western Conference. They were still able to win an Open Cup. So now they have to compete on another platform in terms of CCL, but the star, the core of that team, I think is already there.
Yeah, Aiko Parra, all eyes on him. That'll be a very big deal for them as they try to figure all that out. Some additional news here before we hit the break and then go to the mailbag. We'll talk a little bit about some U.S. national team changes there. Haji Wright, who was with the Cosmos last year, but I think everybody kind of saw the writing on the wall and knew that that was kind of a temporary thing for him. Always wanted to head to Europe. This is the guy who came out of, or at least had some time in the LA Galaxy Academy. It is confirmed he is heading to Schalke, so he will go over there and join their U19 team, so a U.S. national team prospect to keep an eye on. Meanwhile, we're going to head to break. Let's see, some big news to talk about when we come back. The field for the Copa Centenario, it is sealed. We'll find out which two teams got in.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Look up here, man. I'm in danger. I've got nothing left to lose.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Doyle is off doing whatever Doyle does down in Fort Lauderdale. It's myself, Andrew Wiebe, and David Goss. We're into the mailbag. Some news, though, Blondor. Couple winners. Couple American winners. Jill
one
Ellis.
One American winner. One representing American winner.
Dang it.
Jill Ellis, British coach of the
American
team.
A couple American winners at the ceremony. Jill Ellis winning coach of the year on the women's side, as well as Carly Lloyd, the player of the year. Well-deserved to Carly, a World Cup champion. And on the other side, a not World Cup champion. That would be Lionel Messi. He won it again, taking it away from Cristiano Ronaldo. So congrats to all of them. Also, congratulations to Panama and Haiti, who are now a part of the Copa Centenario field. They knocked off Cuba in Panama's case and Trinidad and Tobago in the Haitians' case. So that's huge. That's massive.
It is huge. Yeah.
Wait, no. It's the other way around? Panama knocked off?
Cuba.
Yes, I got it right.
I believe Panama beat Cuba 4-0.
Yes. I was just confusing myself there. Throw us into the mailbag here. Let's give away some swag.
We got an email here from John in Austin. He says, "Hey, guys, newish fans to MLS. My first year really following the lead up to Super Draft. As a longtime NBA fan, familiar with the draft process and what generally you can expect from players drafted in different parts of the first and second round. In MLS, though, player acquisition comes in so many forms. Still piecing together where the Super Draft fits in. Can you give me an idea generally of what you can be expected from guys based on their draft positions? I know it changes from year to year with talent pool, but I'm curious if you guys have any rough guidelines that I can keep in mind." Now, that's tough.
Rough is the key phrase there. I think if I was going to try to define it, I would say you look at the first top five picks and figure that the the talents going there are going to be – you're looking at starters. Perhaps year one starters, but there's no guarantee about that. But maybe long term. First round, there's a chance. Second round, it's a real crapshoot. You're looking for maybe four or five guys over the course of their careers mm-hmm. to make an impact. Overall, it's a depth play, right? It's a long-term play. Can we develop this talent a la a Graham Zusi?
Yeah.
And then it's we're going to get five or six guys this year that can be legitimate starters.
And I'd say if you're comparing it to another sports draft, it's probably closest to baseball in that you got guys in baseball the in the
spectrum.
Seventh round who
yeah.
are starters and first that aren't. Where
well, you're
outside
the Mike
of those,
Piazzas of the world who are the Davey Arnos right. of the world.
By the way, Mike Piazza, legend, Hall of Famer. Yeah. Outside of those six guys, it's the 18th pick becomes a U.S. national team player, and the 19th pick you never see again. So it's very
probably gets
all
cut
over
in preseason.
And it's yeah. very all over the place. Here's another one from Gabriel Munoz who says, "Boys, I'm in a bit of a spot. Longtime Galaxy fan, raising two boys who I intend to follow in my fandom. They love Giassi and they love Gio, of course. Problem is, my wife took the thing in stride. She's not a big sports fan. However, she saw the new LAFC logo and was instantly drawn to it. Admittedly, it's great, and personally, I think the competition breeds greatness. She said it might just be her team in MLS. I'm excited she's engaged, sure, but I don't know if I can harbor a non-Galaxy fan in my midst. Worst case scenario, she turns the boys."
Yeah, I was going to say, you better watch
out. What
do
you do?
You look, it's your wife. You got to let her do what she does. If she's not already been a Galaxy fan, if you've you know, I'm going to say this. It's a little harsh. If you've failed in your attempts to bring her into the fold, it's open season, and LAFC are putting out a pretty good hook there, a pretty good lure. They've reeled her in. Now you've really got to double down on your boys, though.
I'd like to put it out there. Are there any Red Bull fans who had NYCFC
yeah,
fans created in their
family
families?
Divided.
And how did they deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, look, you really – you got to do something desperate. Maybe it's time to break out the second Christmas, whatever it might be. Get those kids some swag. Get those kids some tickets. Got to lock them in because down the line, you don't want to be dealing with 3-on-1. There's no way you want that. That's all we have for this show. Big thanks to Joshua Yarro. Big thanks to Matt Doyle for taking a break from the sunshine down there in Florida to check in about the MLS Superdraft. Remember, 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. We will be there with full coverage. We'll see you then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.